Reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Text 36. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yavahita pratanam mukham nariksha vajana vadad imukhasya dosha bhujya umatim maharad atma vidyayayas chananarati paramamasya tasya mesu. When Arjuna was seemingly polluted by ignorance, upon observing the soldiers and commanders before him on the battlefield, the Lord eradicated his ignorance by delivering transcendental knowledge. May his lotus feet always remain the object of my attraction. Purport. The kings and commanders were to stand in the front of the fighting soldiers. That was the system of actual fighting. The kings and commanders were not so-called presidents or ministers of defense as they are today. They would not stay home while the poor soldiers or mercenaries were fighting face to face. This may be the regulation of modern democracy. When actual monarchy was prevailing, the monarchs were not cowards elected without consideration of qualification. As it was evident from the battlefield of Kurukshetra, all the executive heads of both parties, like Drona, Bhishma, Arjuna, and Duryodhana, were not sleeping. All of them were actual participants in the fighting, which was selected to be executed at a place away from the civil residential quarters. This means that the innocent citizens were immune from all effects of fighting between the rival royal parties. Citizens had no business in seeing what was going to happen during such fighting. They were to pay one-fourth of their income to the ruler, whether he be Arjuna or Duryodhana. All the commanders of the parties on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were standing face to face, and Arjuna saw them with great compassion and lamented that he was to kill his kinsmen on the battlefield for the sake of the empire. He was not at all afraid of the giant military phalanx presented by Duryodhana. But as a merciful devotee of the Lord, renunciation of worldly things was natural for him, and thus he decided not to fight for worldly possessions. But this was due to a poor fund of knowledge. And therefore it is said here that his intelligence became polluted. His intelligence cannot be polluted any time because he was a devotee and constant companion of the Lord, as is clear in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Apparently Arjuna's intelligence became polluted, because otherwise there would not have been a chance to deliver the teachings of Bhagavad Gita for the good of all polluted conditioned souls engaged in material bondage by the conception of a false material body. The Bhagavad Gita was delivered to the conditioned souls of the world, deliver them from the wrong conception of identifying the body with the soul, and to reestablish the soul's eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. Atma-vidya, or transcendental knowledge of himself, was primarily spoken by the Lord for the benefit of all concerned in all parts of the universe. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Daksuranmulitam Yena Tajmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Dapitam yena bhutale dayam rupakadamayam dadati sapadantikam panchakalpa turubhyascha Vipashindu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasade Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. So, greetings from Visant Falls. We are studying the first canto of the Bhagavatam. And we're being introduced to Krishna. I explained how that's been done in many, many times, but it's at a particular time. It's at the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, and many of the devotees are assembled there. As the war ends, we see Krishna's relationship with them. As he's about to leave, which is a great feeling of separation. There's three feelings of separation. One is about to leave, one is in the process of leaving, and one is gone. And this process of leaving, where it's a kind of union and separation, is very, very painful. And we're seeing the sentiments of these devotees. And now, Bhishma Dev is about to die, and we see where his heart is. His heart means his bhava. What is your core? There's some noise here, even though I got it on presentation. But anyway, what is your core mood? And your mood goes beyond your thoughts. Your thoughts can change, but your mood stays constant. If we try to think of Krishna, we may think of Krishna, we may not think of Krishna. But if we love Krishna, we'll always be thinking of Krishna. And then in the time of death, where we don't have any control over, we don't have any control over what our thoughts are, we'll still remember Krishna. So we'll see in Bhishma Dev, really in one sense, the perfection of death in love of God, and therefore in remembrance of God. And of course, those verses, if this subject is so important, the whole eighth chapter of the Gita is dedicated to it. Especially remember that verse, yam yam vapi svaram bhavam, tajantyan kalivam, tam tam evaiti konteyata dhata bhavam. Whatever your mood is at the time of death, that's the destination you will go. And your mood at the time of death is very much determined by your activities during your life. I know I had the realization one day I woke up and I was 65. It didn't seem to be a transition period. All of a sudden it happened. I don't remember the previous 10 years practically. All I remember is I was in my 50s and now I'm 65. And I'll go to sleep, I'll wake up, I'll be 75. And I don't know if I'm lucky or not lucky, whatever you call it, I'll wake up and I'll be 85. But what I put in there and how it changed my heart is what I'll be thinking of. There's thoughts and there's samskaras. Samskaras are a collection of thoughts that push to either accept or reject something. So if you develop a liking for Krishna, like Maharaj Prickett in the womb, he had that samskara. He saw Krishna and it made such a powerful impression. Or sometimes a trauma. you make a powerful impression. And it'll stay within you. Just like death is such a trauma when you die in ignorance. And then you lose everything at once. I always make the joke, or I say how, you know, even if our cell phone is missing, it's a huge trauma. But this is when everything is going. And that experience is so powerful that in your next life, it stays within your subtle body. And sometimes even how you die stays within your subtle, in fear of that. Even though a child in this life has no experience of death, he's immediately afraid of it because there's a samskara. There's a powerful impression. So either by a very traumatic or powerful experience or an accumulation of experiences of joy or distress, then we get a particular mood. And that's what we remember at the time of death, the foundation of our life and what we put in there. And this is what really bhakti is. Real bhakti is we may do so many things in our life, so many different things. And they may all be our duties, but we have to gradually come to the point where we're chanting and hearing about Krishna all day, substantially, which will create our bhav. I'm thinking like this because I'm thinking 65. You know, give me a few more years. Let me prepare. Let me put more things in. And let me be tolerant of the impulses that are not favorable so they will close up. That also happens. If you neglect an impulse, the engine behind the impulse will weaken. And if you fulfill an impulse, it will strengthen. Yesam twantikatam papam. Vajitam priti purvakam siddhami buddhi yogam twam. That's not the verse I want. Yesham. What is it? No, I wasn't. I was thinking something else. It has to be because it's. Yesham twantikata papam jananam punya karmanam. Yesham twantikatam papam. Yesham twantikata papam vajitam priti purvakam. Anyway, it says yesham twantikatam papam jananam punya karmanam vaidvandu mohanya muktam pajanti mam yudhavrataha. That in a lifetime of tolerance and neglect of unwanted impulses, the mind will be purified of them and become pure enough and determined to chant and hear always and affect the heart substantially. It will affect our heart substantially. Krishna is powerful, his name is powerful, his devotees are powerful, his deities are powerful, and absorption in these and his service is powerful. And absorption in these various activities will change our minds substantially and will allow us to remain fixed in the worship of Krishna and will create that bhav. We'll create the bhav as the vehicle which will carry us to our next life. So, Bhishma Dev led a life of devotion. This example is great because he did so many things and he had so many duties. But he was able to fix his mind He was purified at heart. He's able to fix his mind. And now he's remembering his Lord. And he's remembering the things about his Lord that inspired within him his love for that Lord. And by doing that, his love is increasing and he's preparing. And he's reflecting how Arjuna became enlightened by Krishna on the battlefield. And he's praying that Charanarati Paramasya Tasya Me Astu, let there be this object, let this object be the object of my attraction. But Krishna, he's meditating on that incredible scene in the battlefield where Bhishma, Drona, Pamukkata, that Arjuna has Krishna pull the chariot to see who's fighting on the other side. And then he sees his grandfather, he sees Bhishma himself, he sees his guru. And then he has a breakdown. Because he only sees trouble. And sometimes, for a devotee, everything that God sends is best. And we have that confidence. But on the material platform, sometimes we're in situations where we only see trouble. We don't see anywhere we can move. We lose despondence. Some people, they contemplate suicide. I knew this one doctor, and a very simple person, a nice person, and you know, some people came in and they somehow or other said they didn't have a prescription. I don't know what else, but somehow he made that mistake and gave him some medicine, and somehow these were criminal people, and then they got caught. And they saw the prescription. And then they set up a sting operation on him. And then he lost his whole business, his whole career at once. His whole business, whole career at once. And it was very, very heavy. So sometimes there are these situations where we have no hope. We have no hope of controlling the world, a world which is moving against our desires. And sometimes God sends those tragedies to shift our objective and focus from changing the world to changing ourselves where it should be. And therefore, in those situations, we can be even closer to God. And therefore, we saw in the previous chapter how Queen Kunti prayed, Vipada Shantu Tashashvat Tatcha Tatcha Jagat Guru. Let those calamities happen again and again, because then you'll be with me. Interesting. I read a sociological study that mental health improves after a disaster. Why does mental health improve, you know, after a disaster? Many reasons, probably. One reason is you don't have to worry about the world anymore. You just have to worry about your survival. And it bonds people in a common goal and creates the relationships and communities that actually are the foundation of mental health. Where when the world goes normally, it's dog eat dog. And then in disaster, it can become brother and brother, sister and sister, hand in hand, to help each other. anyway, this beautiful scene, and Arjuna, he looks out on the battlefield and he says, Vipatani, Nimatani, Viparatani, I'm damned if I do, I'm damned if I don't. I only see the causes of misfortune. Sometimes you have usually you have a choice. Well, this may be difficult, but if I go here, things will be okay. But here, there's no choice. And then it situates himself in a position to hear. When difficulty is there, we become eager for guidance. And difficulty means that we have failed in digesting the circumstance that is difficult, and we're looking help elsewhere to help us do it. So Arjuna sought Krishna's help. I'm a soul surrendered to you. Please instruct me. And Bhishma Dev is watching this. Bhishma Dev is hearing Krishna speak the Gita. And he sees Arjuna enlightened, seemingly enlightened, because Arjuna's service was to be in ignorance, to be enlightened. And someone had to do that service. And it had to be someone who's so qualified that their service in ISKCON, their service in their troubles, their service in their difficulties, their service in their ignorance, they speak verses in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna's doubts coming from ignorance are verses in the Bhagavad Gita. So, seemingly polluted. And he saw this, and he became enlivened. Next verse. Vinigamam apahaya matpatigyam vitamadi kartum avapluto vitastha. Vita Rita Charano Vayach Chalad Gur Ariya Iva Hantum Ibam Grito Tariya. Fulfilling my vow and sacrificing his own promise, he got down from the chariot, took up a wheel, and ran towards me hurriedly, just as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He even dropped his outer garments on the way. So Bhishma Dev is a Kshatriya, and Kshatriyas appreciate chivalry. It's not that when you come to Krishna consciousness, Kshatriyas appreciate chivalry. Yeah, it's not when you come to Krishna consciousness, you lose your tastes. You lose your proclivities. You just use them in Krishna's service. And it's not against bhakti to have tastes or proclivities. Anyabhilashita shrutam. It says without desires that are not motivated. You can have desires as long as they're not motivated. If they're incidental, they're not against bhakti. So if you have your desires that are your proclivities, those desires are not against anyabhilashita shunya, to have zero other desire-ness. But he has his proclivities as a kshatriya. And you can be a pure devotee with your taste and your proclivities if you use that in Krishna's service. So he has that bhav, and he's remembering that bhav in relationship to Krishna. That's called indirect rasa, via your rasa. The rasa of chivalry means that you see your friendship through chivalry. You appreciate a good fight with your friend, and that inspires your friendship. Or you appreciate the athletic prowess of your friend. and you become completely absorbed in that mood of chivalry, but actually you're experiencing your friendship indirectly. So Bhishma Dev, he's experiencing not just friendship, his master, his lord, in chivalry. And it's inspiring him to focus on Krishna. It's like a person can be in love in various ways. You know, a mother may love her child, but may not like him if he's like a hardcore musician. She may not like that activity. But someone else, that's how they see the person. The same thing with rasa. You may see your object of love in different relationships and appreciate them. So he's appreciating now. He's appreciating Krishna. And he's appreciating the scene. Purport, the Battle of Kurukshetra was fought on military principles, but at the same time in a sporting spirit, like a friend fights another friend. We left out a lot of important points in the previous verse that are relevant to today. And it's just coming to my mind today how Prabhupada criticizing democracy. And where you elect a leader, but he's not a leader. He's got the post for personal reasons, not for altruistic reasons, and it's mixed. So the motive for the rulership is for oneself. And the decisions are tinged in that way and the lack of proper knowledge. Because what is your basis of understanding? You're Republican, or you're Democrat, or you're conservative, or you're liberal. That's not Shastra. Shastra is, it's like in the Bhakti Sant, I was speaking with Kasturba about one program they want to organize, and they're debating how to do it, but one of their principles is firmly rooted branching out. So that's one of their principles. So they're going to, when they'll look at solving a problem, not just branching out, it also has to be firmly rooted. And it's not just firmly rooted and you don't branch out. A very nice phrase. It shows that they're thinking. So spiritual, you know, principles of government are not just firmly rooted in tradition or just branching out into new things. Sometimes they're branching out. Sometimes they're rooted in tradition. So tradition means to mold yourself by the values of the past. And on the other side, completely progressive is just to make your decisions based on what you see today without any foundation. So Prabhupada was criticizing that leaders are cowards because they're not kshatriyas. So they can send other people to war, but they themselves hide from that. Where previous warriors, previous leaders were on the front. I remember Prabhupada was talking about, I think it was Cambodia, and some American got shot or something. He probably said if the American leader was Krishna conscious, he would say, you harm one hair on the head of our man, there'll be fight. They were leaders. Anyway, I don't know what context we can understand that now, but anyway, they were leaders. Happy are those battles, those opportunities for battles that come unsought. Maharaj Prickett was born. He was such an expert leader. Nothing was lacking in his administration. His spirit was enlivened with problems. They want to solve problems. If people are not leaders, when problems come, they just get headaches. When people are leaders, they try to solve those problems. And that's their joy, because they get joy at what do they do well. So, and we can see a modern commentary that There's benefits for democracy. Prabhupada even established that in terms of the GBC. You also established principle of authority. But you can see the weakness. So vidvarai hosta karai samstita parasha prashu yat karna pajope jata. Men who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, they worship other people that are like that. And I always mention, I remember very interesting, and this is really relates to education. Tocqueville, I think you pronounce it, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, the French social philosopher, wrote a book called Democracy in America. And he made the point, when the values of a society are determined democratically, they'll become low class. So there is a principle of aristocracy, of I don't know if it's the word, of, you know, people who have qualification. The problem is, in modern age, they have to do away with it because authority is so abused. That position, authority is so abused that they don't even want to give parents any authority over their children. You know, parent disciplines the child can call the police. And maybe there's a reason for that now. But they were real leaders. I mean, and we all can understand the pathetic state of American politics right now. And no need to be said more. Just in question of integrity and competence. Integrity and competence. Of a leader. Nobility. Think of the term nobility. And how sad it is to think of the quality of our leaders when you match them to the standard of nobility, of character, like Krishna's father, Vasudeva. Krishna's father, Vasudeva, that, and the purport said, there was nothing, 1 second, and anyway, let's go on. A Kshatriya cannot tolerate insults on the principle of fighting. Bhishma therefore promised the next day he would kill all 5 Pandavas with special weapons made for the purpose. Yodhan was satisfied and he kept the arrows with him to be delivered the next day during the fight. By tricks, Arjuna took the arrows from Yodhan, and Bhishma Dev could understand that this was the trick of Lord Krishna. So he took a vow that the next day Krishna would have to take up weapons himself. Otherwise his friend Arjuna would die. And Krishna promised not to take up any weapons. The next day, fighting, Bhishma Dev fought so valiantly that both Arjuna and Krishna were in trouble. Arjuna was almost defeated. The situation was so tense that he was about to be killed by Bhishma Dev that very next moment. At that time, Lord Krishna, wanting to please his devotee Bhishma by keeping Bhishma's promise, which is more important than his own, seemingly he broke his promise. He promised before the battle of Kurukshetra that he'd remain without weapons and would not use his strength to either of the party. But to protect Arjuna, he got down from the chariot and took up the wheel of the chariot and hurriedly rushed at Bhishma Dev in an angry mood as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He dropped his covering cloth on the way, and out of great anger, he did not know that he had dropped it. Bhishma Dev at once gave up his weapons and stood to be killed by Krishna, his beloved Lord. The fighting of the day was thus ended, and at that very moment, and Arjuna was saved. Of course, there was no possibility of Arjuna's death because the Lord himself was on the chariot. But because Bhishma Dev wanted to see Lord Krishna take some weapon to save his friend, the Lord created this situation, making Arjuna's death appear imminent. He stood before Bhishma Dev to show him that his promise was fulfilled and that he had to take up the wheel. So Bhishma Dev's promise was he would kill Arjuna, we'd have to kill him. And Krishna's promise was that he wouldn't take up weapons. So Krishna had to break his promise to save his devotee. And also to allow Bhishma Dev to try to fulfill his promise. Otherwise he'd have to kill Arjuna. And it's also nice that the day ended and the fighting stopped. So there was civilization. Even in modern warfare, there's the Geneva Convention where there are certain rules. You know, if you lose a war, that's it. You're not punished for killing people. It's understood that in wars that happened. You're not considered a murderer. But there's limits to what you can do. And if you break them, you can be prosecuted. So even in the modern world, they understand that there are certain regulations, even to war, that even people with such horrible enmity, they have to adhere to. And it was even more pronounced that they had to fight in a way that the citizens wouldn't be disturbed. So we can see in many ways how modern life is degrading. You can see it in just so many ways. And the root is spiritual consciousness is lacking and values are lacking. And people are not guided, and therefore they come up with their own philosophies that lead to violence in the name of religion or the name of morality. So things, it's almost what's predicted in the Bhagavad Gita, how things will get worse. Okay, we'll go one more verse today. Sita Vishak. Sita Vishika. Ata Vishirna Dhamsa. 38. Shatajya Paripluta. Atitayano me. Sabham abhi sasara umad vidayatam. The Bhavatu me Bhagavan, the Tir Mukunda. May he, Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, reward salvation, be my ultimate destination. On the battlefield, he charged me as if angry because of the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows. His shield was scattered. His body was smeared with blood due to the wounds. So this is part of his rasa. This is chivalry. In service. And you may fight your friend. And there may be some scratches and there may be some things. And it's pleasure. You know, because it fulfills that chivalrous spirit that you have some wounds or some scratches. But they take this to a whole other level. And it's just funny how psychology here exists in perfection. So we see anything that exists here, it exists in perfection. So we see even the Parakya Rasa, and we see even fighting. There's some, in the midst of everything is ultimately the service of Krishna should be at the root. And therefore, people Because if you look at it, the Ladini Shakti, it becomes the it's the pleasure potency in the spiritual world. It's the pleasure of Brahman, Brahmananda, and it's material pleasure. So it's the energy of God to give pleasure that's perverted. But the energy, when purified, has a purpose of service. So even that energy of sporting and fighting and the pleasure one gets in friendship in doing that exists in the ultimate sense with God. And that's what's being said here. And that's what Bhishma Dev is feeling. This is the inspiration for love. You appreciate people in different ways. And he's appreciating Krishna as my Lord, my hero. And he's appreciating his own service of allowing God to experience that pleasure of relationship in sporting. And of course, look at the world. The NFL, the NBA, the baseball league, the soccer leagues, the things. People are crazy for these things. And what the Bhagavatam is showing is there's a perfection and purification of them. Because ultimately, it's not the activity, it's the consciousness that gives pleasure. Of course, things here are perverted in terms of, you know, lordship. Just like Prabhupada talks about extended selfishness. You know, I am the body, and you extend the self to your family. Then you act for your family. It's a little bit more, it's more selfless, but it's extended. It's still in terms of your own ego and your own identification. Then you can extend it to your country, humanity. But it becomes increasingly more purified. But where does it ultimately go? And that's identification with God. And identification with God is service. That's the relationship with God. So we see how these things exist here, and they're somehow or other, when you look and analyze anything which people are attached to, there's a root of it which can be traced back to the exchange of God with his energies. Here, it becomes in the service of ego, and there it becomes in the service of God. And one of the things of Bhagavad Gita is to demonstrate that there is a dichotomy between activity and consciousness. A dichotomy, but they're not an absolute correlation. The activity doesn't absolutely correlate. Indicate the consciousness. And even in the war, consciousness can be Krishna conscious. The whole Bhagavad Gita would say is Buddha Yoga, because you're following the intelligence given by God to serve him. Even in that aspect, you're serving his society by performing your role. And on a higher level of consciousness, you can do it even in devotion. That this is what God wants me to do. And to an extent, we can carry that over to our work in the world. If it is our duty, even if those duties are born out of our desires, if it becomes our duty, then we can do it for Krishna. And we can do it nicely for Krishna. We can do it for Krishna's pleasure. The dealings of Lord Krishna and Bhishma Dev on the battlefield of Kurukshetra are interesting because the activities of Lord Sri Krishna appear to be partial to Arjuna that enmity would be from the day, but factually all this was especially meant to show favor to Bhishma Dev, a great devotee of the Lord. He was doing things. He was giving Bhishma Dev the service of fighting, and he was enjoying that relationship with Bhishma Dev. And he was conscious of it, Krishna. So here Bhishma Dev is put in a compromising position against Krishna, but it's the will of Krishna. The astounding feature of such dealings is that a devotee can please the Lord by playing the part of an enemy. So pleasing the Lord is what he wants. And to catch that desire. And spiritual life means when you are enthusiastic for that voice of God's will, as it comes from Shastra or Guru, or manifest in the world through nature, that's where your bhav is. And in perfection, it's called priti. And in priti, you actually have a strong pleasure from the pleasure of God. The Lord, being absolute, can accept service from his pure devotee even in the garb of an enemy. The Supreme Lord cannot have any enemy, nor can a so-called enemy harm him, because he is ajita, or unconquerable. But he takes pleasure when his pure devotee beats him like an enemy and rebukes him from a superior position, although no one can be superior to the Lord. There's just different flavors of love. And one flavor of love is, I am your maintainer and I am your protector. That comes from the father and mother. That is their flavor of love. So if God wants to enjoy that flavor of love, then he gets rebuked or punished. But from his parents, that is their love, and he'll feel their love. These are some of the transcendental reciprocatory dealings of the devotee with the Lord. And those who have no information of pure devotional service cannot penetrate into the mystery of such dealings. Bhishma Dev played the part of a valiant warrior, and he purposely pierced the body of the Lord. So to the common eyes, it appeared that the Lord was wounded. But factually, all this was to bewilder the non-devotees. The all-spiritual body cannot be wounded, and a devotee cannot become the enemy of the Lord. Had it been so, Bhishma Dev would have not desired to have the very same Lord as the ultimate destination of his life. Had Bhishma Dev been an enemy of the Lord, Lord Krishna could have annihilated him without even moving. There was no need to come before Bhishma Dev with blood and wounds, but he did so because the warrior devotee wanted to see the transcendental beauty of the Lord decorated with wounds created by a pure devotee. This is the way of exchanging transcendental rasa, or relationship between the Lord and the servitor. By such dealings, both the Lord and the devotee become glorified in their respective positions. The Lord was so angry that Arjuna checked him when he was moving towards Bhishma Dev, but in spite of Arjuna's checking, he proceeded towards Bhishma Dev as a lover goes to a lover, without caring for hindrances. Apparently his determination was to kill Bhishma Dev, but factually it was to please him as a great devotee of the Lord. The Lord is undoubtedly the deliverer of all conditioned souls. The impersonalists desire salvation from him, and he always awards them according to their aspiration. But here Bhishma Dev aspires to see the Lord in his personal feature. All pure devotees aspire for this. So, prema. You want to please the Lord, you want to serve the Lord, you want to be with the Lord, you want to have a relationship with the Lord. So this was, it's all coming to his heart because this is his Bob. We are persons. We are parts of God, and different parts of God have different relationships and different ways to please him. On Sunday here at 3, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, who lives here now, gives a Bhagavatam class. And he made a point, which I thought was interesting, that Radha and Krishna's pleasure, described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is unlimitedly increasing. So somehow or other, we have the capacity to add to God's pleasure. And why not? Yeah. God is, at this point, is God is changeless on a platform because he's Brahman, he's God, he has energies. And his greatness is that despite his energies, he remains changeless. That's the first 2-3 verses of the Isha Upanishads. Om pranam vada pranam idam purnat purnat udachyate tadajyati tadajyati tadure tadantike tadantarasya sarvasya tadusarvasya vaya. He's near, he's far, he walks, he doesn't. Okay, are there any questions? One second, let me just...
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hi, Bo. Yeah.
Yeah, I do have a question.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a really nice class also. I mean, I'm sure that the answer to this is that, well, Krishna is just inconceivable, so I just got to accept it, but... You know, it's just difficult for me to understand how Krishna could be so angry. Well, I mean, as you know, I have a problem just, you know, understanding love in the form of anger anyway. But, you know, but especially if Krishna is so angry that he could, you know, become oblivious to the fact that his outer garment dropped, you know, yet... He was moving that way toward Bhishma out of love. You know, to hold those two conceptions in the same frame is like, you know, because, I mean, he was so overcome with anger, you know, yet he was in love, you know.
Well, I would say more like that. It's, these are things that do have to be realized. And the logical point is God's. The logical point is God's inconceivable potency, and you know, to fully understand it, yes, there's a reasonableness of it. That his emotions are obviously born. Anger can also be born out of love. You know. You know, it can be born out of love also if one is angry. For example, someone blasphemies a devotee and you become angry at it. You're angry and you have love at the same time. You're angry at the person and you have love. So your question is, how can it be directed to the same person? You know, not that there can't be anger and love, and the anger in the same person and affection in the same time. I guess it's also, the concept of Leela, that God is experiencing all types of rasas and relationships, and he's enjoying the chivalrous ras. And at the same time, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes that God is both Mugdhatva and Sarvagya. He's all-knowing and he's forgetting. He's forgetting when he needs to forget, and he's all-knowing when he needs to know everything. The energies serve him. There's his Leela Shakti puts him in a situation so he's forgetting, so he can have surprise. So God's energies, he exceeds his control, so to speak, his energies. And the Leela Shakti is creating these different flavors of intense love in various circumstances, which require God to be lost in himself. Otherwise, he'd be lacking in something.
Yeah, actually, I knew you were going to bring up the point of, you know, Savakya and Mukta, because, you know, it reminded me of my other question. But still, back to Bhishma, you know, I can actually, even at my stage, understand love out of, anger out of love, when, you know, you're angry at your subordinate because of out of concern, you know. But in this case, yeah, Bhishma, it didn't seem like it was out of concern that he might harm himself, let's say. You know, you're angry with a child because they're doing things that are not in their best interest for themselves, you know. So, yeah. But in this case, you know, this is...
Okay, well, therefore I'm saying it's at the other level. It's not, you know, that it's God, so he can be forgetting and all-knowing at the same time. And in terms he's angry.
How does it make it artificial, you know?
Well, it's not artificial. He's not. He's angry, and that's his bhav. And also there's loving. And it's just like it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that there can be intense anxiety in the highest bliss at the same time. At the same time. That the same thing can be felt like nectar and poison at the same time. And I forgot who gave the example of dry ice, a material object that has two opposite effects at the same time. It burns and it's cold at the same time. So why not at that transcendental level?
Yeah, no, I accept that one. You know, it's just then for Krishna to enjoy by forgetting, you know, for example, you know, he can't actually be beaten, but he can, you know, forget that he's God and allow himself to be beaten. You know, it's hard to not see it's hard to see how he can enjoy that when it seems a little artificial for him to just forget that, you know,
I guess you're trying to understand it from your level of what you are capable of. And God's capable of more. I'm just saying, God's obviously capable of more. He's not limited that way. You can't see it, but he's not limited in that way.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. No,
it's not, I mean, God is all pervading. He's manifesting in different forms at the same time. You know, it's a whole other level. It's not under the modes of material nature, and that's beyond time. So we try to understand things where the logic requires a sequence, you know, to something that happens in the transcendental world, which doesn't require a sequence. You know, it doesn't have to be, well, if I'm this and that at the same time. God can separate. He's enjoying in various ways already in the world, in different things. In one place he's forgetful, in one place he's the all-knowing God, but there's just one person doing everything. So I guess the question goes to the point of the inconceivable nature of God. And that's the reality, and that's the logic.
Mm-hmm, yes. Yeah, that was helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Gail. Anybody else like to say hello? Seems like only Gail has served the mystical mute and demute button. Anybody else?
It's Mukunda.
Mukunda, got your letter? I'll come there, we'll have our discussion there, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. I'm going to go now. A bunch of culprits.